so many ways to say I love you in different languages across the land. You haven't heard them all, so I'll tell you as only a true geek can.
Hello, and welcome to a very belated episode of Geekly Yoked.
A week is not belated.
Is it like 2 weeks? Like, aren't we like fully behind like a whole cycle?
I don't think so.
I think we are. I think we might be.
I put out a blog post about podcasts. That kind of like counts as a thing.
Okay. We've been a little behind.
But it doesn't matter because we are the world's best married Christian geek podcast.
I'm Rachel Kessler.
That's Mother Rachel Kessler.
Indeed.
And I'm Lehman Kessler.
And we are somewhat remiss in podcasting because we have been moving.
We have been moving.
A very onerous move, covering great, vast distances of this great, true north, strong and free in which we live.
We crossed a driveway.
It was a very big driveway.
We went from 45 to 43.
It's a vast chasm of a driveway.
It was very surprising how strange and arduous this move was. Because we're like, oh, we're just moving across the street. We'll just take stuff over. You don't have to box things up. It'll be great. Man, do I kind of miss boxes. Like, boxes
it
at
was
least.
Kind of, now everything is just in, like, a chaotic mess of where it got sort of thrown into a laundry basket and then dumped into the house and then thrown into a laundry basket. And so there's just no order to anything.
We did make wonderful usage of IKEA bags.
We did make wonderful usage of IKEA bags. It's true.
And we had some wonderful friends who came out to help with, you know, some of the bigger items. So all in all, it was a very fine community building exercise.
Indeed. So the thing is, our the church that I serve has, well, actually they have three houses, but they have one in which the senior priest lives and then two other staff houses. And we were in the smaller house and then the bigger house came vacant and we were like, hey, that's a bigger house. We should see if we can move into that house.
You know, for Jesus.
For Jesus. And for our franchising as a family.
That's right. We're gaining something of a junior partner in the Kessler Enterprises.
Like, kind of like a worker monkey?
Somehow, I think various labor laws are going to prevent us from being able to put whatever this thing is to work right away.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I was banking on that.
In short, Rachel has a parasite.
I do have a parasite. And so that the sort of parasite that makes life sadder and harder and, well, I mean, not sadder in, like, the grand scheme of things. Sadder in the sense of throwing up isn't fun.
And that you can't have coffee.
Or sushi. Or anything that's good.
That's right. Mother Rachel Kessler is finally putting the mother in Mother Rachel Kessler.
It's true.
We are expecting a little bundle of joy. Rachel is acting as the magical vessel of divine creativity.
And I swear if one more kindly old church lady asks me how I'm feeling, I will tell them.
Yeah, this has not been a glowing pregnancy.
No, I think the best was the night that I spent in the ER.
Yay!
That was great.
I got to visit you there, drive you.
Yes. And, like, it's really awesome because, like, legitimately, I just had a really bad stomach flu.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, not exactly a good thing to get in pregnancy. And so it was exacerbated somewhat by my condition.
Indeed.
And then they sent me in to make sure that I was all, like, hydrated and stuff. So I got some fun IVs.
I got to get all hazmated up.
It's true. It's true that you had to get, like, all suited up to be in the same room with me.
It was pretty awesome.
But then, given that we're in, like, a nice waspy church in Anglophilic Toronto.
Yes.
Once my condition became known
yes,
to the congregation, who all knew that a few weeks before I had had a fairly grievous
hospital stay
illness, the Kate Middleton jokes came. Have I not told you that?
No, you have not.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
I see you as more of a Pippa.
Yeah. So that's been fun. That's been fun.
And we've added a new podcast to our roster to sort of help us through this.
Oh, it's true. It came around just the right time.
So everyone knows that we're big Maximum Fun junkies with my brother and me and that whole ilk. But the wife of the sort of founder of Maximum Fun, Teresa Thorne, she and another woman have created a podcast called One Bad Mother, which
it's
is devoted...
amazing.
It's devoted to being a sort of an aid, a point of relaxation and you know, reassurance to all mothers out there, largely by swearing a lot and talking about how horrible being a mother is. How very deeply rewarding and, you know, and magical.
My soul.
But just the terribleness and the poop. There's a lot of poop.
I'm assuming there will be poop.
But this got us thinking, hey, we have a podcast. We have something growing inside Rachel. Let's exploit it for said podcast and look at the role of infancy and pregnancy and sort of
childbirth.
Yes, in the kind of the geekosphere, because there's a lot of babies and baby making and
processing. Can I make the comment now, or is it too soon to basically say that male genre writers don't know what to do with women?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's easy just to knock them up.
Yeah, there's a lot of this that sort of goes on. There's a lot, you know, like a lot of sci-fi tropes, you know, sci-fi shows or movies will have like some kind of pregnancy, and it's sort of like, I guess this is a thing a woman can do. They get pregnant, right? Certainly can't, you know, be president.
But I mean, like, I appreciate that so much more now that, like, I am pregnant. I don't appreciate it. I mean, it infuriates me more.
Would you say, like, that it yanked your lady chains a little?
If I were to endorse that phrase's existence, perhaps I would. But I don't know if I'm willing to quite stoop to that level.
We'll see.
But there is this, like, I feel like I'm no longer a person.
No. You're a vessel.
So it's like during the whole like first trimester thing when no one knew what was going on, it was kind of annoying.
They just thought you were crabby.
They just thought it was really, yeah, I was like, it's so hard to be nice to little old church ladies when you're pregnant.
Well, that was the thing they talked about in the other podcast, was about like the worst thing about first trimester if you don't tell anyone.
Is no one knows.
And that's the time when you need the most support.
Absolutely.
And you need the most understanding.
I'm usually so friendly with like the rest of the staff at the church and everything. And for weeks I was just going in and like closing the door of my office and just sitting there with my head on my desk.
Yeah.
It was so sad. And then there was the day that I had to preach at the cathedral.
How'd that work out?
And I was just like, please don't let me throw up on the dean. That would be bad.
Did you throw up on the dean?
I did not. I mean, you were there.
Oh, that's right. I saw very little throwing up.
But then now that everyone knows, in one case, that's like way better because like,
it's out there. You don't have to worry about it.
But at the other hand, it's like I am literally no longer a person. I have lost agency.
Although, you know what? Your profession really would have aided all, you know, a whole lot of being clandestine. I mean, it's a lot of billowy robes.
Oh, it's true. It's true.
You know, everyone looks a little puffy, you know.
And I've already, amidst the, you know, like they only found out like 2 weeks ago, right?
Uh-huh.
Or, well, I guess closer to 3 weeks now. But. The number of comments I have already received on, like, the state of my body is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then the people who seem, like almost aggrieved that they can't keep track of how much I'm growing and all the things. I'm like, I'm so sorry.
Have people been suggesting that you take the, like, picture a day, you know, to put on Facebook?
Fortunately, no.
Create a little flip book?
No. I don't think most of the people who would say these things are, like, savvy with the Facebook.
That's good. Yeah, we're being fairly sort of cagey with the whole kind of, like, social media, Facebook-y, like, you know, again, exploiting this child.
We figure we talk about it on the podcast because, like, the three people who listen to our podcast
already
knew that we're pregnant, so it's good.
Yeah.
Oh, I just said we're pregnant.
Oh,
I just
Rachel.
Did that thing.
Yeah.
I just did that thing. Oh.
Rachel vowed.
I feel dirty.
Rachel vowed to never, in fact, you know, treat this as a collective situation.
Talk about our pregnancy.
Unless I, you know, have to deal with all the crap she has to. A common refrain in this household stolen from Scrubs is, you do it. But.
And, oh, I have to say, I really just cannot count the number of times that John Locke from Lost has been in my head.
Oh, yes.
Over the past, you know, three to four
months. Gained a sudden appreciation for playing Go?
No. I think he played backgammon.
Oh, my apologies.
Yes. Don't tell me what I can't do!
Oh, I see, yes.
Because I get a lot of that.
Yeah.
I get a lot of that.
You are treated like a Victorian lady who may faint at any moment.
By certain individuals who shall not be disclosed in a public forum.
Indeed.
Yes. Very much so.
Now, as much as we might love discussing Rachel's condition, we decided that it might be, you know, more fitting, giving our podcast to look at pregnancy throughout the geekosphere, yes, and some of the sort of the famous geek babies. And I figured I would start right off with probably the most, you know, most abundant source of sort of babydom and geekness, which we've discussed before, and that would be the Muppet Babies.
Muppet Babies. Oh, we're going to get sued. Never mind.
That was parody.
Was that parody?
Well, the way you were singing it.
Oh.
The Muppet Babies, you know, I think that they were certainly the first thing that came to my head that had babies sort of right there in the title. But they're not really babies. They're like sort of Muppet toddlers.
Yes. And they're just kind of like shorter versions of the Muppets.
But like,
there's not much about them that is actually toddler-ish, aside from the fact that they are animated and short.
And they do wear diapers.
But do they ever actually defecate in those diapers?
Yeah, you never hear about Kermit Meconium, but that's probably
no.
for the best.
I would agree, yes.
But, you know, I think that, you know, that introduces a lot of people of our generation to the notion of babies, you know?
I think you're stretching it there, my friend.
I think
you're grasping.
Animal was, you know, very, he had a little bonnet, so I just assumed babies had bonnets. Was that a thing? I'm judging by your blank look that it was not a thing.
Not that I am aware of.
So moving down the list, next famous baby would be Superman. And I'm referring specifically to Superman's, like, immediate, like, you know, infancy, being put in the rocket and sent off, you know, to Earth for his, you know, while his family blows up on Krypton. And this begins to introduce the trope of the wonderful dead parents.
Yes, right, yes, because you cannot have, like, living, positive parental figures.
We touched on this a bit when we were looking at
creative families.
Yeah, but you know, you have Batman's dead parents, you've got Superman's dead parents, Peter Parker's parents mm-hmm. aren't really on the scene. There definitely is this bizarre sort of, we don't want these parents around, I guess.
But isn't that, but it's part of the traumatic experience that creates the character,
is that,
right?
Do you think that's just it?
I think so. I mean, like, because Batman lost his parents, right?
Yeah.
And that was a definitive thing that, and he's not exactly a picture for mental health, Batman.
It depends on who's writing him.
I'm just saying. And, I mean, Superman, there's very much, I think, a big part of Superman's character is that orphan mentality, the adoption idea is part of it. And then you have, with Spider-Man, I mean, it's the abandonment of the parental figure that drives them to this extreme act. So I don't think it's like a Joss Whedon sense of
parents are inherently problematic. Gotcha.
I think it's actually parents are inherently good and absent that the dramatic loss of that figure leads to something extreme.
True enough. Okay, I'm going to follow that.
I mean, superheroes are great, but I mean, they're usually brought into their circumstance by some calamity.
No,
that's true. The distinction between the superhero and the supervillain is how they respond to that calamity.
That is also very true. Okay, so we can at least, you know, we can see how this idea of kind of taking the parents out of the scene can be for more dramatic purposes rather than sort of the, you know, the awkwardness of having your hero suddenly have to, like, pick up my parents, you know, from the airport, and then I gotta fight Kingpin. I guess that would not be a very interesting story. Although, I don't know. Now, one area what we've been seeing parenthood crop up is in our rewatching of Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah. This is the fun one. This is the one that drove our friend, the other Rachel.
That's right.
Crazy.
And this, Rachel, would you like to describe what sort of happens in this particular scenario?
So, in this scenario, basically one of the actresses on the show got pregnant.
Like they do.
like you do. So they had to figure out a way to work around her pregnancy.
They couldn't just sort of like there was no, hide it like Claire Danes.
And there was no legitimate way for that character to be pregnant.
No.
I can't really think of...
She was sort of dating Odo, maybe? Not really.
No, but she had that other boyfriend.
Oh, that's
but
true.
But I think of that... And no, but he was still around at that point.
The politician?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Vedic. And...
I think the Vedic was gone, so I think it was. I think she was now dating the weird, like, Prime Minister of Bajor.
Oh, right.
I can't keep track of Kira Nerys's relationships.
Bilbo is very put out by Kira Nerys's relationships. So, there's no way for her to have legitimately gotten pregnant. So, they make another character pregnant.
Keiko.
Yes, who would, you know, legitimately get pregnant. But then they have an accident where... Keiko is incapacitated, and in order to save the child, they have to remove the fetus and put it inside Major Kira.
Yeah.
So Kira becomes like the surrogate for Keiko and Miles's baby.
And then becomes like a weird sister wife.
Yeah, and like that would be... There are ways that they could have handled that well.
Yeah.
And they did not do any of those ways.
No, they had that one weird episode which like suggested that like Miles and Kira were starting
are
to
almost like
the,
yeah, like she basically turned into a sister wife and like moves in with them.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that that our friend pointed out was that, you know, in some ways I get this because Keiko is not a particularly important character, so I think makes sense to spend a lot of time
caring about her.
Yeah. And the actress isn't particularly good. But you only see her beaming and happy about this whole situation, and you never see like
angst.
Any kind of conflict. Like, even for an instant, you never see any kind of conflict about, you know, another woman carrying her child.
And it's a real shame because they dealt with the birth of Molly very well with that hilarious episode with Worf. Yelling at her for not following,
it
you
was
know,
awesome.
What the simulation suggested should be her birth plan.
I think it's again, it's this wonderful, like, lack of understanding of women and...
how they relate to children.
Or each other, or... and I think it is interesting that for that whole pregnancy storyline, Kira becomes a very useless character.
Yeah.
I mean, she is defined by that pregnancy.
Yeah.
And that is her whole storyline for the bulk of, what is that, season five or six, season five?
Yeah, four.
Or four. Four going into five, I guess. I mean, it's like, you get a woman pregnant and suddenly you are no longer a human being.
Well, to be fair, she was always a Bajoran.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, there was another show, I can't quite remember its name, that sort of dealt with surrogacy, and what you might suggest would probably be a better fashion?
Would it be my favorite show ever?
That is a distinct possibility. would you like to describe how Farscape dealt with surrogacy?
Well, I think Farscape is very interesting in this, because... Well, okay, so... Our another friend of mine who's like super gender studies ish was complaining at one point when we were watching Farscape, like sort of midway through ish.
Yeah.
And we got talking about other shows and how again, writers don't know what to do with female characters in science fiction. So just get them pregnant.
Sure.
And how she thinks it would be really interesting for a male character to get pregnant.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, don't give anything away, Rachel. Don't give anything away.
Ah, yes.
But I mean, so in Farscape, the two main...
Human-ish
love interest
the
characters.
The two attractive people.
the two people without so much prosthetics.
I was about to say, who don't have to wear 8 hours
exactly.
worth of plastic.
Exactly. So are on screen together a lot because they didn't have to spend as much time having their
faces
assembled.
Yeah.
End up conceiving a child, sort of.
Yes.
Well
there's all sorts of bizarre mechanics.
Anyway, we won't go into that.
We need to go into.
So they have a child. And at one point, the fetus ends up inside of Dominar Rigel the 16th.
A Muppet.
Short Yoda-sized Muppet with... Who is very greedy and has three stomachs. So the child ends up inhabiting one of the stomachs. Gestating in one of the stomachs. But I think it is an interesting idea where they... Like, I mean, okay, so he's not a living, breathing human male character.
This is not Junior.
But he is a male creature who gets impregnated and spends the bulk of the final miniseries of Farscape pregnant with the main character's baby.
And he seems to complain about it a lot more than Kiko did.
But then it's kind of funny because my favorite line is the get this frelling thing out of my body. Our baby is not a thing. I'm sorry. Get this miracle of life out of my body.
Do you feel like that sometimes, Rachel?
Sometimes, a little bit. Well, we can talk about how I relate to Aaron's son and her pregnancy in but a moment. But I think that is a really interesting twist on the sci-fi surrogate parent, you know, being impregnated against their will, they don't actually become the parent to this child. But then, you know, the funny thing is that once the baby is taken out and put back in Aaron, Rigel does miss it and... Like, it becomes, like, a sort of comedic thing.
Well, we can get back to Aaron, but I want to take a bit of a detour, and when talking about, like, weird pregnancy sort of suffusing a show, and I realized that Battlestar Galactica
pregnancy!
It had the weird, like, planet that they went to where the Cylons were, like, experimenting with pregnant women.
Right.
And they got that one girl.
Starbuck,
that one. They got her pregnant, I guess.
Well, no, they didn't. They told her they got her pregnant, but that wasn't actually her kid.
Yeah, and then they had the whole issues with the various half Cylons and like all those babies, and that was very strange.
Yeah,
and I don't think I care for it. I feel like there were sort of a lot of babies going on, but no one really knew what to do with them.
Well, yeah. Well, that was Battlestar Galactica. We already dealt with that in our. Our episode on
series finales
and stuff. But it was a huge theme of the show. Like,
well, and it could have been interesting, right? Looking at generations and like the connection with childbirth, but it really just sort of came across as squicky.
Yeah.
Now you really like what they did with Aaron.
I did actually quite a lot. Well, I think it's I've read a lot of. People who feel that Aaron begins as, for those who have not heard my rants about Farscape before, Officer Arison's son, is a, born and bred soldier who has not really, been brought up to deal with complex emotions.
No.
And is just, the tough chick who's, spends most of the time rescuing the male protagonist.
Yeah.
And protecting him and looking out for him. Which is why I think the Farscape impregnating Rigel was perfectly fitting for the show. Because the show did so many other interesting things playing with gender and gender roles and gender relationships.
Yeah.
Sort of undermining John Crichton's masculinity and
playing
up Aaron as a fairly atypical female character.
Yes.
Some people feel that because in the later seasons, John and Aaron do enter into a romantic relationship, and throughout much of the fourth season of Farscape, Aaron is actually consumed with,
deep emotions.
Yeah, for without going into all of the complexities, and anyone who doesn't want to be spoiled,
too late. Sorry, Bilbo.
But spends a lot of her time fixated on Crichton.
Yeah,
and trying to
sort out
ensure his affections for various reasons. And then, you know, you find out that she is pregnant with his child, and much of the plot revolves around, you know, and it's another one of these very strange pregnancies where she's able to hold the baby in stasis without it growing in her uterus.
Yeah, it is a very interesting sort of sci-fi wish fulfillment kind of pregnancy, sort of pregnancy on your own terms.
Absolutely. So the baby is held in stasis until you want to release it, and then once you release it, the baby is born in like a week.
Yeah.
And that was really for reasons of plot in
the
miniseries.
Yeah.
But they're like, we have 3 hours and she's just gotten pregnant and we have to have birth to the child before the end of the miniseries. I actually think the way they handled it is really fascinating, because I don't like the idea that a strong female character can never enter into a romantic relationship.
Well, that's the thing, right? They never made her sexless, right? She was a strong female character, but she wasn't an automaton.
Absolutely. And so I like the fact that she is actually, by the end of the series, especially in the miniseries, she has come to a point where she is a whole and complete person who can be open and vulnerable and have an actual relationship with another human being, and can be open and vulnerable and compassionate enough to embrace the role of motherhood.
Yeah.
Which I think is, you know, it's an incredibly powerful journey for her character. You would never think that the person you meet in the pilot episode of Farscape would, you know, four seasons in a miniseries later, be an incredibly compassionate wife and mother.
Yeah.
But
without it, it's not.
But without it diminishing her character
precisely.
At all. I mean, this is huge spoiler alert, so please skip ahead about 30 seconds if you really don't want to hear anything. But I mean, one of the greatest moments in the miniseries is Aaron's son sitting there with her newborn child in a sling in her arms, shooting the Skaren who is just about to kill her husband.
Yeah.
And then looking at her and going, it's a boy, in case you were wondering. I'm like, that is Aaron's son, right?
Yeah.
Like, she embraces this role of wife and mother without it at all sacrificing the incredible
strength
that she had. And I think what resonates with me a lot, especially as they deal with her character in pregnancy, is how obviously she wants the child.
Yeah.
And she loves John very much, but she is kind of resentful of this thing.
Yeah.
That is taken over her body, especially being a person who is as used to being physically
in control
as she is. And so, I mean, there's some great lines about, you know, John tells her to be careful and she's just, I'm pregnant, not incapacitated, John. And I mean, it's really like, there is some good stuff there that I don't feel like we get to see pregnancy and motherhood presented in those kinds of really honest terms very often, especially not in science fiction, because again, science fiction does not have the track record of incredible nuance when it comes to women's issues.
That's very true.
But I mean, I get that. I get that kind of ambivalence.
Yeah.
And that, you know,
those
yeah, and that you,
conflicting
you know,
feelings.
And you feel like you're told by society that you're supposed to be feeling like this magical vessel, and that this is supposed to be wonderful, and you're supposed to be glowing and beaming all the time, but mostly I just want to punch people.
I think that's fair.
And I don't feel like we get to see it, which is why I love that One Bad Mother podcast so much, is because
it acknowledges.
It's good-humored. And, I mean, the people who run it love their children and love motherhood, but are just honest about it.
Yeah.
And I feel like Farscape just dealt with that in a way that you don't get to see very often.
Now, you watched this more recently than I did, so I'm interested in your take on the two very different pregnancies in Angel.
Oh, yeah.
Because it dawned on me that you had two interesting looks at kind of,
Are you talking about Darla's
Darla's pregnancy and then
Cordelia
sort of,
later on?
Yeah, the weird Cordelia pregnancy.
Well, Cordelia impregnated twice, let's not forget.
Okay, that's, okay.
Yes. Forget that horrible episode.
Well, that's the thing, right? Cordelia's pregnancy seemed to fall more into, like, the weird demon, like, sort of creepy, bad sci-fi.
No, I mean...
Whereas Darla's pregnancy was really,
really
fascinating.
Well, okay, so let's talk about Darla. Darla is a vampire.
Yes.
Who gets... She's killed as a vampire. She's staked through her heart, turned to dust.
Yes.
And gets brought back...
Through creepy...
Magic stuff. Gets brought back. But gets brought back as a human.
Yes.
And the thing is that she, when she died the first time and became a vampire, she was dying of syphilis.
Oh, right.
Because she was a prostitute in, like, the 16th century or
however it was.
Whatever. And so bringing her back, she was dying again.
Yeah.
So Angel tried to win a life, like, you know, win her life.
Precisely.
And was told that, even though he went through all the trials... was told that it wouldn't work because she'd already been given a second chance.
Oh, I see. Okay.
At life. And it's an awesome episode. And then just at the point when Darla has accepted her mortality and has accepted that she, you know, will have the chance to die as she was meant to die.
Yeah.
The bad guys come in with one of our other well-known vampire characters and...
revampire
her, mostly to torment Angel.
Well, you know, that was sort of their enemy.
It's true. But because Angel had this life that was won, when they, you know, as plot develops, end up sleeping together, again, they do what vampires are not supposed to be able to do, which is conceive a child.
Sort of, and this is like a Twilight baby.
No, this is a fairly normal baby. Because it's just a normal human baby.
Yes.
And, well, I guess we could talk about pregnancy in Twilight, but I really don't want to.
Mostly I wanted to draw the contrast of how vampire pregnancy can be done well.
Yes. So Darla shows up again. So Darla goes away. Angel and Darla sleep together, and Darla goes away. And she shows up again 8 months later, very, very, very pregnant.
Yeah.
With this, you know, mystery child that no one really knows how it came about. And what you find out is that the baby is human, which means the baby has a soul. And the baby is, that soul is feeding Darla.
Yeah, like it weirdly, like, is infused inside her.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when she is... She's giving birth and it's not going well because she realizes that her body...
can't.
As a vampire, is not meant to give life.
Yeah.
And so there's this incredibly powerful scene where she says that when, you know, after she gives birth to the child, she'll no longer love it and she won't remember loving it.
Yeah.
And she stakes herself so that...
the child can escape.
Yeah, so she turns to dust and they're left with... the child.
No, it's a powerful
it's
scene.
And amazing. And I mean, I think it evokes so much of that. I mean, the intimate relationship of the mother and the child in the womb and the sacrificial nature of motherhood.
Yeah.
And I mean, like it's incredibly good and incredibly powerful.
And then you have Cordelia's weird demon pregnancies.
Well, that was... I mean, that it is. Like, it's the worst kind of... Well, not only because it involved... Cordelia sleeping with that said baby who got taken to another dimension and aged like 17
and
years.
And turned into Vincent Kartheiser.
And, yeah. He's slightly less annoying on Mad Men. Slightly.
Okay.
Pequeno.
All right.
Pequeno. Well, I guess, like, he's slightly less annoying on Mad Men because he's supposed to be annoying on Mad Men.
Oh, I see. Yeah, there is the weird, like, you're supposed to kind of, like...
because you're not supposed to like anybody on Mad Men.
Well, that's true.
Why do I watch that show?
Sexy costumes?
Yeah, I guess. Anyway.
So that whole business was just bad news.
So it was just bad from the start. And it's very much, you know, you take a character like Cordelia, who is, again, an incredibly strong... Like, Cordelia really grew on me.
Yeah.
By the end. I mean, she's an incredibly strong, powerful, independent female character who... Yeah.
Well, who came from very broad backgrounds. Like, she was, you know, literally the sort of ditzy cheerleader character.
Absolutely.
Even when she went to Angel, she still had some of that. But... Like,
but Angel gave her room to take on.
Some of the most dynamic growth on that show through her.
So I mean, I think as a whole, she was an incredibly powerful female character, and then she got knocked up by mystical forces
and was evil and confusing.
But she wasn't evil; it was the thing in her body that was taking. It was like the opposite of Darla, right?
Yeah.
The evil being was inside of her,
the middle-aged black woman.
Yeah. But
that just shows how a show can both really get
but I think, sort of pregnancy. I think it's the same thing that happened on Deep Space Nine, though, because Cordelia was actually supposed to come back and be the great villain for season 4,
and then
she got pregnant,
right? Oh, I see.
So Charisma Carpenter herself actually got pregnant. So well, it's, again, like they had to write
you're not a person around now,
it.
So.
Yeah. I got the impression she wanted to leave the show. Anyway.
Oh, fair enough.
Because that means that's why she didn't come back
in
season 5. I mean, and to be fair, she'd been there since the first episode of Buffy.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah.
I think when you... Yeah. So, I mean, it's... She'd been at it for a while. Angel got kind of... You got kind of the best of times, worst of times.
Did they ever do weird pregnancy stuff on Buffy?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the closest thing you get is, like, weird, like, pseudo-sister from a different universe.
I kind of like that, because, I mean, Buffy is a great... I think it would have diminished something about the quality of that show if they'd gone pregnancy route with her at any point.
Yeah. The final thing I wanted to look at, just because it deals with pregnancy and motherhood and children...
Miles Verkosigan?
Is Miles Verkosigan.
Yay!
I want to start off by another sort of element of sci-fi wish fulfillment and ask you what your thoughts are now on the uterine replicator.
Oh, this is so hard.
Because
I am still... All right, for the benefit of our listening audiences, and I guess this is where we can tie it into spirituality a little bit, right? I am still in, like... natural childbirth camp.
Yeah.
So we, like, I have a midwife here in Toronto.
Yeah.
And we are planning a home birth.
Yeah.
I'm sure we're going to hear about that.
Probably.
But that, this is a decision that we've made. And, as much as, you know, there is all this technology available that can make birth a relatively comfortable experience
or regulated experience.
Yeah. There is something in me that is just not comfortable with that overdependence on technology and the way that we make everything into a medical event and regulate. I think that's a really good word you used. Everything is regulated, and I think there's just, like, we lose something of the wonder of childbirth. So as much as I'm like, oh, pregnancy is the worst, and parasite in my uterus, I still am very positive about what
is going on.
Yeah, and I still, there is still something that... discomforts me about the idea of the uterine rep. Like, I don't want to take this kid out. Well, I mean, until it's ready to, you know.
Yeah. For those who don't know the Verkosigan series, it's a sci-fi somewhat nil SF, but not really. Lois McMaster-Bujold has invented a couple of very interesting concepts within it. And one of them is this idea of the uterine replicator. Essentially,
in the more technologically advanced worlds.
Yeah.
Most babies are born in these replicators.
Yeah, they're sort of popped out of the mother, so the mother is not incapacitated.
Exactly.
During pregnancy.
And it's seen as what's interesting is, for the most part, the idea of having a baby the old-fashioned way is seen as this barbaric notion. Like, why would you do that? Sort of like the way some people look on home birth and natural childbirth now.
Indeed.
But then what's it, what I think is so, where Louis Masterbujold is once again so spot on with, like, cultural trends.
Yes.
There is, I don't know if you remember in Cordelia, it's like an offhand reference in Cordelia's Honor, okay, at one point, where she talks about, like, the groups that still choose to have children the natural way, yeah, and how they're, like, so self-righteous, oh, about it. And, like, itself like the natural child.
Well, it just goes to show that the mommy wars, you know, will go on for centuries.
Forever. And then when the main character goes to Bariar, the planet that's been cut off.
Yeah, that's sort of become 19th century, yeah, Imperial Russia.
You know, a lot of this technology, eventually this technology gets brought over.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see the way it interacts with that more traditional society. And the fact that she, when she conceives her child, Miles, she, you know, under the pressure of her husband, agrees to go along with a natural.
Yeah, and then has to, because of terrorism, is forced to take this sort of uterine replicator, yeah, route. And it's very interesting because you get this weird mixture of her being both sort of a pregnant woman, but an action hero. Like, she's,
yeah,
she's now protecting or hunting for this, you know, for her child.
What's amazing is when the replicator gets stolen.
Precisely.
So, yeah, she's off trying to get her unborn child back. It's really weird, but yeah, it's amazing.
But it works so well, and it says a lot about motherhood and about, yeah, like, this, you know, protecting your child in a very physical, you know, especially when it's outside of you. I don't know,
yeah,
like it's something I can't really, you know, equate to.
Yeah.
But it's a wonderful read. And she comes back to these issues of, you know, what does it mean to be a child, a parent? You know, there's all sorts of cloning that, yeah, goes on in her stories, and you know, she looks at places where clones are essentially just seen as disposable tools, you know, medical waste. And then other places where a clone has the same legal rights as a sibling. And, you know, what does that suggest about people? I mean, I remember there was a Next Gen episode where Riker is cloned against his will and, like, just phasers it without, like the sort of, it's still, yeah, being made. And essentially just, like, phasers it, like, oh, I will have no abomination of myself made. And watching that now, it's like, oh, that's kind of... That's a little strange. So, I mean, cloning is its own,
yeah,
bizarre tale that we could get into. But really, I wanted to look at Lois and Masterbujold and really, you know, recommend her for anyone who hasn't read her already, because she is able to tackle very personal issues in a sort of, you know, lasers and starship sort of way.
Can I say that I feel like she's gone downhill?
Yeah.
Can I say that?
Her last book was not inspiring.
But neither is the Sharing Knife books.
Oh, see, I have not read the,
yeah,
Sharing Knife books. Is there pregnancies and baby bacon in that?
No, there is. Actually, yeah, there is very much. I'm trying to remember, yeah, because it's been a while. But it's huge, because the whole idea of the Sharing Knife is a 4-book series that needs to be like a novel.
Oh, I see.
and you know me, and you know how much I like dislike things that are longer than they need to be, so
yes,
that's like the greatest,
yeah,
insult I can give something.
True enough.
But the idea of the Sharing Knives is really, really, really cool.
Yeah.
That like two lives have to be given for a Sharing Knife to work.
Oh, I see.
Which,
okay,
is why they're called Sharing Knives.
Yeah.
Because they're made out of bone.
Yes.
So the bone has to be given.
Okay.
And then they also have to be, like, primed with the soul.
Oh, okay.
I hope I'm getting that right. Like, I really
have. I have not read these books, so I can't
help
you. No,
but I'm sure someone is listening who read them. And, but I think I'm remembering that correctly. And the main girl got pregnant unintentionally.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And is like running away from home and ends up, what ends up happening is she gets into a thing. She gets into a situation.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And somehow her child, she miscarries.
Oh, okay.
And the soul of the child primes the knife.
Oh, okay.
Like a knife that's ready. Yeah. A knife, the bone knife that has been made, but not...
properly.
Not the other soul hasn't been given precisely yet. So her child ends up, and then she... So it's kind of a cool...
Okay, so it does work, just not over four books.
Yeah, exactly. I haven't read the fourth one yet. The third one was kind of like, there is no need for this to exist. There's like on a boat going down a river doing,
Like Huck Finn?
No, it's not that cool.
Oh, okay.
So actually, there is an interesting pregnancy thing. And like, so that was kind of cool. But I just don't feel like the I don't know. I feel like she's been writing younger female leads, and
yeah, that is very true.
And that is not her
male
strength.
Her male heroes are getting older, and her like female
characters are getting younger, and that's just a little creepy.
She does middle aged women very well, like people who have lived.
She does middle aged people very well. That's true. Not like Miles when he was a 20-something.
That is very true.
Which is why I had such high hopes for Ivan in the latest book, and then she gave him a dopey girl. Like, I would have been so awesome for Ivan to get a wife that would just kick him in the balls.
Very true.
And that
we should
not
all
happen.
Be so lucky. I think that's a wonderful final word from this magical vessel of life. This font of bliss. Is that what you are, Rachel? Is that how you describe your situation?
Don't make me hurt you.
Would you like a taco?
So badly for like a week.
There's been some interesting food cravings. Rachel is in fact a walking cliche.
Well, I was complaining to Lehman that I just like, since getting pregnant, there's no like, I should eat healthier now and I should be eating lots of salads. It's just like, I want to eat macaroni and cheese every day.
Well, luckily that's one thing that we can provide you in Canada, the it's land true. Of Kraft dinner.
But that kind of mac and cheese. I want like real mac and cheese.
There are some very angry Canadians who are going to be writing into this now, Rachel. I hope you realize that. So before those letters arrive, I figure we might as well sign off. As always, I'm Lehman Kessler.
And I'm Rachel Kessler.
And from the world of fandom, faith, and family, in no particular order.
Yeah, because that's not the order we usually say it in at all.
Geek out, y'all.
And don't we have a promo we're supposed to be playing?
Stay tuned for a promo.
And there came a day unlike any other, when Earth's geekiest podcasters found themselves united for a common theme, to take on topics no individual geek Christian podcast could withstand. Heed the call, then, for now, podcasters, assemble! Featuring Are You Just Watching? Movie, book, and TV show reviews with critical thinking for Christians. AreYouJustWatching.com. Faith, Hope, and Nerds. Being creative and being a Christian. FaithHopeAndNerds.com. Game Store Profits. Where geek culture and God culture collide. GameStoreProfits.com. Geek This Podcast. Geek culture without the pocket protector. GeekThisPodcast.com. Geekily Yoked. The world's best married Christian geek podcast. GeeklyYoked.com. Holy Worlds Podcast. Encouraging the effective use of niche media genres for the glory of God. HolyWorlds.posterous.com. The Sci-Fi Christian. Bringing you theology at warp speed. TheSciFiChristian.com. Storymen. The intersection of pop culture, theology, and history. Storymen.us. Strangers and Aliens. Exploring faith and imagination. Strangers and Aliens. .com.
Issue 1, Superheroes.